Love where you live.
Hey, 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 lovely listeners. Kevin Guthrie here, talking all things mental health and well-being. As always, thank you so much for listening to another one of our podcasts on mental health. We have a guest in the studio. Today we have the lovely Elaine Atkinson. Welcome, Elaine.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you so much for being here with us today. A question that I quite often start with. Elaine, tell us why you wanted to be here today.
Well, mental health is quite a big subject, and where I work at Code Fitness, and also have my own EA Health, which is sports therapy, and exercise, movement, daily movement is quite crucial to mental health.
Yeah.
And improving it and getting out of all those depression and anxiety. So I think it's one thing that's missed quite a bit,
yeah.
Particularly through doctors, but actually just getting out, moving, that mind-body link is quite huge.
Yeah. For you, just explain to the listener what you mean by moving.
Anything, really. So it doesn't necessarily have to be going to the gym. It can be standing, stamping on the spot, going up and down stairs, anything just to get the blood flow going, and also getting the nutrients and actually getting things to the brain, because that's a key thing, is actually with increased blood flow to the brain, those areas of the brain that are around fear, stress, motivation and mood actually get bigger.
Yeah.
So it's really important, and the last thing we want to do when we're feeling down or low is move, but actually that's what we need to do.
Yeah. Well, interesting. If we get anxious, depressed, or any of those kind of exasperated feelings, the mind almost tries to stop us from moving, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. It tries to protect us.
Yeah. Yeah, it's doing what it's programmed to do. It's programmed to protect us, so it tries to keep us still, but actually the opposite of that, we need to be out and about.
We do, definitely. So even just getting your feet on the floor, standing up, sitting down, those types of things, even just for a couple of seconds, that movement just breaks that cycle, breaks that system, starts the blood flow going.
Yeah.
And can really help in terms of mood and motivation.
I wonder whether the listeners listening, whether that might surprise them, because we think about movement, we think about the word exercise, that can fill a lot of people with dread. It really can. But actually, you know, standing up and kind of doing some on the spot, like gentle knee raises or anything like that, I wonder whether they had considered that movement. I mean, we always think about movement as must go swimming, must go jogging, must go. That's at the other end of the spectrum, isn't it?
It is, yeah. You know, if those things help, then great.
Yeah.
And it's a journey, really, isn't it? It's actually, you know, when you're in that mental health, when you're in that down mood,
yeah.
You perhaps don't want to socialise. You don't. It's an effort to get out of the house. So just do things where you can. And Dr. Chatterjee does a lot of, you know, walking on the spot while you're waiting for the kettle to boil,
yeah.
Things like that. It's those small baby steps.
Little things.
That will help, yeah.
Yeah. Who was that, Dr.?
Dr. Chatterjee.
Who's that?
Oh, he's brilliant. So he's a GP, but he looks at food, he looks at health, stress, and he uses all those to help. So he doesn't try and give out medication, but he uses those things. So yeah, he's got three books out, and it's all about tiny movements, drinking water,
yeah,
daily movement, those types of things, eating the rainbow, vegetables,
yeah.
And so yeah, it's that holistic approach to health and mental health.
Well, how lovely to hear of a doctor that isn't trying to get you on medication.
In fact, complete opposite, is trying to get you off of it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he really spends a lot of time with people, and realised that actually we were just going for quick fixes. We weren't actually going for the root cause. We were treating the symptoms.
Yeah. Straight away, I'm thinking about how many people might see him as a doctor and reject him immediately because they hadn't got medication from him. But actually, his way is way more powerful.
Oh, definitely. And I mean, it's something that's been going on in America for a while, sort of functional medicine and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But he has this habit of simplifying it. So I think a current book he's got out is around about just doing 5 minutes of anything.
Yeah.
So deep breathing, sitting outside with a cup of coffee or tea first thing in the morning, those types of things.
Yeah.
The simple, easy things and, you know, 5 minutes of exercise. It doesn't have to be going to the gym.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't need to be that extreme. And maybe walking around the garden, walking around the block may lead you into something more active. Maybe it won't. It doesn't matter, as long as you are moving the oxygen around the body.
It's exactly that. It's getting the blood flow, oxygen, getting red blood cells moving, getting oxygen and nutrients to the brain. It then has chemical effects within the brain. So, and, you know, you're lighting up neural pathways that you wouldn't normally do.
Yeah.
And that is really, really key.
Okay, so I've got a question for you. So if I, for example, we were talking off air about me pulling my shoulder, which I do often. If I have a theory that if I have a pain or a pulled muscle in my trapezium, my shoulder, then I, in my head, I go, now you can still go to the gym and you can still walk on the jogger. And it will, in my head, I go, well, that'll do the shoulder good because it pushes oxygen, will push oxygen through the muddle. Muddle? what's muddle? Shoulder. So therefore it's good. Am I right in thinking that?
Yes, definitely. Pain's not a bad thing. It's just a slight warning.
Yeah.
I tend to talk to my clients about a pain scale of 1 to 10. And if anything is below a 6, then it's fine.
Yeah.
You need to keep moving. The body is designed to keep moving. Pain is just there to warn you that there's something not quite right.
Yeah.
But actually, you know, even with back problems now, it's about keeping moving. Long gone are the days of staying in bed and staying still. The body's designed to move. Keep it moving.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess what we're trying to... So if I use myself as an example. So if I pull my shoulder and then I didn't go to the gym, so what would happen in my head was I'd become very still. I might become very low. There's more potential for me being depressed. Whereas if I look at my shoulder and go, okay, so it's hurting you, I'm not going to go into the gym and I'm not going to do any shoulder presses or anything like that. But walking on a jogger will firstly help repair the damage that's there or the tear that's there. And secondly, stop my mental health from deteriorating, because then you end up in a vicious cycle, don't you?
You do, yeah. It's the same, you know, with athletes. When they get injured, that tends to be when they go into depression or those type of things, because they're used to moving. So if I can keep them moving and other people can keep them moving, you're still getting all those nutrients through the body and helping the body repair itself, because that's what it does. We actually self-generate and repair.
Yeah. So it's movement. It's movement in small ways, like Elaine said, just a lift, a little bit of like standing on the spot and moving your feet, stuff like that, which they then may lead into other parts of exercise. If I'm working with somebody that's depressed, I'll say to them, I want you outside walking for like 30 minutes, just 30 minutes a day. It's not a lot. Get wrapped up if it's cold outside. Wet's slightly different, but if it's just cold, get wrapped up, get outside.
It's great to be outside in the cold, and, you know, you're wrapped up warm, there's blue skies, and, you know, the air is nice and clean and fresh when you're breathing it.
Yeah.
So I really like going out on cold days, I have to admit.
I think it's amazing. And I do think in the UK we have a lot of, really beautiful winter days that I'm not sure that we see them.
We don't know.
We assume that we live in this grey, cold climate, but actually we get a lot of really beautiful
We do, and actually going out in the morning and getting light in your eyes helps significantly with sleep later on. There's been a lot of research about it.
So, oh, wow.
So vitamin D, I know we don't get a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, just getting outside in the morning. Again, this is something from Dr. Chatterjee, but also other things, other places that I've researched, is just getting out for 5 minutes in the morning, getting light in your eyes significantly helps with your sleep in the evening.
What a great piece of information there. I was just writing down Dr. Chatterjee's name because I need to check him out and research
him.
Check him
out. He's on Facebook. He's got his own podcast. He's absolutely brilliant. Really common sense, simple things to follow.
Yeah, I like immediately. I like his style. So, tell us a little bit about your work. What do you do work-wise?
So I have two areas, really. I have the sports therapy, so I help people with aches and pains. Back issues, knee issues, if they've injured themselves, not just through sports but through anything, so rehab after operations and things like that. And I also do personal training, but more specifically around, again, back issues, so people who think that they can't exercise because of back issues or yeah, other issues. But I've also now researched a lot about exercise and nutrition for people, women who are in menopause, because that's something that I had to look at a few years ago for myself.
We had one of my other recording guests today was a lady called, it was only 2 hours ago, Bev Thorogood. Do you know her?
No, I don't.
So Bev delivers... She delivers workshops into business based around the menopause.
Super. That's really important.
Yeah, because yeah, she recognised... actually, somebody asked her at one point if she could go in, and she's built a business based on that one request.
Yeah, definitely. It's such a huge area. And again, the research that I've done, there are places in the world called blue zone countries where women don't have specific menopause symptoms, and they looked at the reasons why, and again it's around exercise, nutrition, getting outside in the sun, laughing, having their own tribe and support network.
Yep.
And a little bit of chocolate and red wine. So there we are.
I like the last two. So where are blue zone countries?
So it's places like Japan, Greece, all those types of areas where possibly they don't have so much Wi-Fi, social media.
Yeah.
They've stayed sort of grounded and a bit more into, doing their own gardening and growing their own fruit and vegetables, those types of countries, really.
That's amazing. What an amazing piece of research that is.
Yes, yeah, it's really significant, actually. So, and again, it's something that, with nutrition and exercise, it's that gentle exercise again, and not, you don't have to go hardcore and
yeah,
and high intensity. And actually it's shown for, as we age, not just for women but for men as well, that it raises the cortisol level too much, so our bodies can't cope with it as much. So it's that gentle everyday daily movement,
yeah,
that's quite crucial again.
Well, I guess that's similar to I remember reading some research around vitamins, that if we take too much, the body just rejects it anyway. So it's about gentle input of the things that we need.
Definitely, yeah. It's that small tweaks. I find with a lot of my clients, we don't have to do huge diet changes, and I don't like doing huge diet changes because you fall into a habit anyway.
Yeah.
So, and it has to work with your life, and a lot of it is just, it might be around portion size, it might be around just how often or not they're eating,
yep,
and those types of things. So it shouldn't be a huge change. It's just adding more vegetables in, adding bits of fruit, making sure you're hydrated. And again, hydration is quite key for mental health and alertness and those types of things as well.
Because, of course, we are mostly water.
We are, yes.
So in terms of your work, how did you get into it? Why do you do what you do?
I got into it initially to sort myself out with my back. So I hurt my back as a child doing gymnastics.
Okay.
And it took 27 years to get a diagnosis.
Wow.
Finally found out that I'd actually quite badly fractured it.
Yeah.
And then was just told to sort my core out, which didn't quite ring true for me at the time. So I actually looked into it and realised that the pain and things that I was getting was probably due to muscle imbalances and those types of things. I was quite active at the time. I was doing a lot of kickboxing and running. So looked into it, found a course and thought, well, I might as well learn myself how to treat myself.
Yeah.
And got into it that way. And then as part of the course, I had to do sort of 150 practice hours of hands-on treatment.
Yeah.
And, you know, luckily working with the guys at Code, they allowed me to use their room. And once I'd finished the course, I loved it so much that I just kept doing it part-time. Yeah. Because I really like problem-solving and helping people.
Yeah.
And then a few years ago, where I was working, there was possibility of redundancy, so I thought I might as well go for it. I would regret probably not doing it, so I went for it, and here I am 2.5 years later and absolutely love it.
Oh, that's amazing. Like you say, you do love it.
Absolutely love it, yeah. I'd do it for free if, well, I do very often, occasionally. So when on the gym floor, I'm, you know, if people are tweaked here and there, they're sort of like, you know, I'll do a couple of minutes on them just to help them get through,
yeah,
and those types of things. But yeah, and we've just set up a 40 plus, well, two 40 plus groups to help people, you know, who want to get in the gym but are a little bit worried about it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've got two groups of 10 ladies, and we have a laugh in the gym and have coffee and tea after, and
yeah,
a little bit of a chat and social chat, and that's going really, really well.
Again, and you mentioned community earlier when we were talking about Blue Zone.
Yeah.
You mentioned community, so it feels like you've replicated that a little bit in terms of creating a little community within a community.
Definitely, yes. I'm not sure about men, but I'm sure there is that need for community there as well. But yeah, that support, even just knowing that someone else is going through a similar thing to you and they understand, even if they can't help you, that they understand what you're going through.
Yeah.
It's again, quite a support to a lot of people.
Yeah, I wonder if men do that through things like circuit classes, football, other types of group sport.
Quite possibly, yeah.
Which wouldn't necessarily need the title of, well, there's no creation there, it just happens.
It does, yeah.
Organically.
Yes.
And would a group of men engage in something that was marketed the same as yours? I'm not sure. Maybe it would, but I don't know.
No idea.
Who knows?
Who knows?
We'll let Luke pick that one up.
We will.
he can sort it out. So that's your work. Obviously, you really enjoy it, which is fascinating. We're talking here about mind-body connection and the connection between allowing the body to move and how good it is for the mind. And it still staggers me how many people don't understand that connection. They don't get it.
Not at all, no.
And I explain it as it's like a series of cogs. So imagine the body from the top of the head down to the toe is just a series of cogs. And if something's not happening correctly with one of the cogs in the head, it can affect the body and vice versa.
Exactly. And hormones are linked, and the systems that go around the body are linked and feed back. So there's a lot of research now that the gut feeds back to the brain.
Yeah.
That your gut is actually your second brain.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think in Western society, we've probably behind where Eastern philosophy is about that mind-body connection. But hormones, it's going back all the time. So, you know, it is quite crucial.
Yeah. So So in terms of that, because I agree with you and I've read a lot of stuff on that as well. So for me, that's about keeping my gut as healthy as possible. I use kefir.
Yes.
Kefir milk every day. For people that don't want lactose, it's no good because you do need the milk element to it. But kefir grain is really good for keeping the gut as healthy as possible. I make my own. I have the kefir grain, and I just with kefir grain, you put milk onto it. It expands, makes kefir milk. You strain it off, and then it's a 24-hour cycle. And I just put it in protein drinks.
Yes.
I put it in a protein drink with some frozen berries and a little bit of oat. And it's, I tell you what, I love it.
Yes. Quite a tangy taste initially. But
But
get used to it.
Yeah, you do. But I tell you what, in a protein drink with protein powder, protein powder, frozen berries and some oats, and you can hardly taste it at all.
Yes.
You can hardly taste it, but every day. So therefore, if you're keeping your gut healthy, then you will hear or feel the messages that it is producing.
Definitely. Definitely.
Because it is really powerful. And just to clarify that, you know, when you get butterflies, or they're the ones that we recognize. Yes. So they're the ones that people go, oh yeah, I do feel that there. Well, there's many, many more that we aren't necessarily feeling or recognizing.
Yeah, and I was just about to say that, actually, you know, it goes back to the old saying of what's your gut saying.
Yeah.
So, we've probably known it. We've just forgotten it.
Well, it's almost like it was an old wives' tale, or it was just a saying that we didn't quite believe. But actually, there's so much power there.
Definitely, yes.
The other one is head over heart, or heart over head, and how we definitely feel things in our heart. You know the phrase, oh, follow your heart, follow your head. Yep. And stuff like that. And I say to people, no, follow your heart, because that has more power than the head does. The head is just about survival.
Yes.
a lot of the time. And we know now that the heart and the head communicate. It's a thing called heart math. The heart sends more signals to the brain than the brain does to the heart. If the heart is beating in rhythm, so regular rhythm, through doing things that we enjoy, walking, all of the things that feed us, kind of organically, I used to call it feed my soul, then the brain gets a signal that everything's okay and the anxiety starts to settle.
Yes. So there's a lady that I read, Dr. Kristin Neff, who talks about self-compassion, mindful yep. self-compassion. And one of the exercises she gets you to do, which really, really works, is just if you're anxious or you need to calm down, is just putting your hands on your heart and slowly yep. breathing, and you're almost like giving yourself a hug.
Yeah.
And it calms the brain down as well. So it's quite powerful exercise to do.
Yeah, it sounds like heart-based meditation.
Yes.
It is literally, I don't know, it feels like you're connecting with, it's almost like you're sending a signal to the brain, and I'm saying this as I'm putting my hand on my chest to feel my heart, to signal to the brain that the heart's okay.
Yes.
It's okay, it's still beating, everything's fine. I've relayed this story before, but my sister told me a couple of weeks ago that she went to the doctors, and she was convinced she was having heart palpitations, and she was talking to the doctor about it, and he says, well, how do you feel? Like, she says, well, I feel like my heart's not beating in rhythm, and yada yada yada. And he went, okay, let me have a listen. So he listened to her heart, and he went, your heart's fine. It's beating exactly as it should. So somehow in her head, she had been given the message that something was wrong.
Yes.
But then when the doctor went, I can hear your heart, it's beating perfectly, she then went, oh, okay then, and then believed it and carried on. So it can, when we talk about mind-body connection, it can happen the other way as well. We can end up with the wrong messages.
Yes. Yeah.
So check them out.
Definitely. And, you know, your heart rate, if your cortisol level is higher because you're stressed, then the body's natural response is to raise blood pressure, raise your heart,
yeah.
because you might have to run or fight
yeah.
at that moment. So the body is quite intelligent, but it's also quite stupid at times as well.
It's quite simple in its and its makeup at times, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
I mean, it really is a sophisticated machine, but in terms of that that kind of fight or flight area, it is simple.
Exactly. Yeah, like and just breathing. So a lot of people who are in fight or flight or in pain will hold their breath up in their chest.
Yeah.
And that then signals to the brain that you're in that nervous state and alert, and therefore you can't calm down. We're just, again, taking the breath, hand on the heart, taking the breath down into your stomach.
Yeah.
Calms it all down.
Absolutely. Deep breathing is so powerful. Sometimes when I offer people deep breathing in therapy, they go, you can almost see them looking at you, so this is what I'm paying you for. Exactly. And I'm like, well, it is what you're paying me for because you're not doing it.
Yeah, I've been working with a physio for a mentor, and he's just released a book around back pain, and been working with him. And the first thing that we do is get people breathing.
Yeah.
With back pain in particular, they hold their breath. And actually, it's the reverse of what we want them to do, because your pelvic floor and your diaphragm isn't moving, so it's therefore making the pain worse. So we spend quite a few sessions just breathing. And yeah, people do look at me really strange.
Yeah. Is that where you... It's so powerful and has such a powerful impact on the body. It feels like there's so much stuff there that we could continue to talk about, and I really want to, but I think... There's something else here that you kind of came in for. There's something else you wanted to talk about. What we'll do, if it's all right with you, is we'll do a second recording later on in the year, and we'll go back to the kind of mind body connection, because that is so powerful. But there was another thing that you wanted to talk about.
Yes.
What was it?
So 4 years ago, quite a shock. I was diagnosed with ovarian cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was healthy, you know, working out at the gym, eating fairly well, those types of things. So it was quite a big shock. And obviously had to have chemotherapy as part of that. So 5 months of chemo. And one of the things that really helped me get through it was, again, exercising and keeping a routine and just getting up and out when I didn't feel like I wanted to. And you know, I was with my checkups with the oncologist, and that they felt that actually I'd tolerated the chemo a lot better than most.
Yeah.
Because I was fit and healthy, and I was continuing to go to the gym as far as I could.
Yeah.
And you know, just had a positive mindset around everything to get through it, really.
Was it quite hard at times to continue that routine whilst you've been given such a, I mean, the, you know, the big C word is everybody's biggest nightmare. So I'm guessing it must have been quite hard at times to pick up and go, no, I have to do this.
Yeah, it was quite hard. I wanted to keep life as normal as possible. I mean, that's difficult when you hear there and everywhere for hospital appointments, tests. But my chemo sort of fell into a bit of a structure, is I would have a chemo on Tuesday, and then Wednesday I'd feel a little bit sick, but I was, you know, well enough to keep moving, keep going. Thursday was a day where I was really, really tired, but it was important to me that I got up.
Yeah.
Even if I just went outside for a couple of steps or whatever, anything to keep moving.
Yeah.
I'd probably fall asleep then for another couple of hours, but it was really important that I kept life going. Friday, we used to laugh because it was that was my doolally day. So I would have I'd have a conversation and I'd stop in the middle of it because I used to forget every word. I didn't know what I was going to say. You know, I'd put things in the fridge that should have been in the cupboard and those types of things. So we knew that would happen on a Friday, and then Saturday I'd feel normal. I'd be back in the gym Saturday, lifting weights as far as I could.
Yeah.
And Sunday back boxing, and then Monday back at work.
I can't begin to imagine how difficult that period must have been. And 5 months of chemo.
Yes.
5 months. What was the time period between? Where are you at now with that?
So I'm 4 years post-chemo in June.
Okay.
So I don't have to go to any consultant appointments, but you know, if there's anything I'm worried about, I just ring and I'm straight in.
Yeah.
Luckily for me, it was found very early, and for ovarian cancer, very, very early,
because yeah.
normally it's not found till stage two, and the outlook then would have been significantly different, but I was lucky it was found very quickly. So, you know, I was fortunate, and you looked around, you know, waiting for your chemo, and looked around and thought, these people would change.
Yeah.
Places with me, you know, I've got a 95% chance of still being here in 5 years.
Yeah.
They would change with me like a shock. So, you know, just get on with it. You've got to deal with it. There's nothing you can do about it. Just do the best you can.
That's a really, really positive mindset. Was that difficult to maintain during some of that time?
Yes and no. Trying to keep life as normal as possible and going to work, that was really important for me as well. The hardest bit was losing my hair. I didn't think it would be.
Yeah.
It was. But just doing the things that I needed to do and keeping life as normal as possible was really good. And luckily I've read a lot of stuff around positive psychology, and there's a fab book called The Art of Being Brilliant by Andy Cope.
Yeah.
And I've done a lot of work with him in my previous job as well. And that's about positive psychology. And yes, you'll have down days, but it's bounce back ability.
Yeah.
And actually my chemo used to last, 6-7 hours. So I had a long chunk of time being sort of hooked up to a machine.
Still.
And I used to listen to podcasts. I used to think of it as a spa day, really. And, you know, I could sit there and people watch, which is one of my favourite things to do, and just read books and just chill out, because I didn't have you couldn't do really much else. So, you know, it was in The Art of Being Brilliant, they talk about 2%ers of the population have a positive mindset, and it's like, right, well, how would a 2%er deal with this?
Yeah.
And, you know, yes, there were days where I didn't feel very well, but, you know, my heart was beating. I could still breathe. I didn't have toothache. Get out of bed. Let's do it.
Yeah. 2%?
Yeah.
Only 2%?
Yeah, they found that there's people who, they call them 2%ers, who tend to have more of a positive outlook.
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean that they don't have down days.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you've got the people right at the bottom who are always what they tend to call mood hoovers, energy vampires, and then the rest of us sort of bounce between those.
Yeah.
Those. But yeah, so it's like, yeah, how would a 2%er deal with this?
I mean, we're tapping into mindset there, but it feels like, I was just about to say, it feels like your mindset saved you, but I'm not sure it saved you, but it certainly assisted you.
Definitely. I think I remember sort of being told that they'd found cancer cells, and it's one of those moments where you sort of go out of yourself and into your head, and the first thing I thought was, did she just say I've got cancer?
Yeah.
And the second thing was, right, this will test whether you've got positive mindset or not.
Yeah.
And and then I remember someone saying to me, look, you just have to deal with it. And they're right, I couldn't do anything about it. I couldn't, you know, move away and it would stay there.
Yeah.
So you just have to deal with it and find ways through that. There's people worse off than me.
Yeah.
So.
And actually, you know, you said then there's nothing I could do about it. And you said there was nothing you could do. But I think there was, and I think you did. And I think what you could do about it was maintain a positive mindset, make sure that you got up and you moved and you got about, and you did all of that. So for me, you did do something.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't change the fact that I had cancer.
Can't change that.
And that I couldn't, you know, that I had to have chemo and those types of things. So it's, you know, again, that positive mindset is, what can I do? And it was going to affect me. You know, yes, I was tired. I didn't know how I was going to feel from the chemo. But, you know, I had a 95% chance, and I needed to take it, really.
That's amazing. What an incredible story. Is there anything, you know, for people that are listening, and people will be listening to this that either have been or will be affected by the big C word, what would you say to them? What nugget of guidance would you offer?
That's a difficult one, because there's so many different types of cancers, and
yeah.
you know, those type of things. And I would just say, take each day as it comes, do what you can, try and keep things as normal as possible.
Yeah.
And again, just, you know, live your life as much as you can, and just get out there and do it.
Yeah.
Really.
You ever seen the program on Netflix called Heal?
No.
Oh, you should watch it. It's amazing. It has people like Dr. Joe Dispenza on there and other people, but it's really interesting. Do I entirely believe it? I'm not entirely sure, but it is a fascinating program. So it's all about the powerful healing of the mind.
Yeah.
And I'm aware that some people, it will be too far stretched for some people to believe. And maybe me in a small way, but it is a really, really fascinating program. It talks about how, as a race, we have created a culture that where we rely on medication.
Yes.
Unlike Dr. Chatterjee.
Yep.
Unlike him, there's that drug companies have created an environment where we think we need drugs, but Heal's really interesting. It's a really powerful program.
Yeah, I'll look into it.
Yeah.
But again, you know, we've come in, particularly in the Western society, where we try and stop the symptoms rather than looking for the root cause. And actually, initially looking for the root cause will take more time, but it actually gets to the reason that you got those symptoms in the first place, and therefore ultimately is a better use of money and resources.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's like the big why. Everything, you mentioned it earlier. So you said earlier that you like being a problem solver as with your physio side. And if I'm hurting somewhere in my body, there has to be a why.
Exactly.
There has to be a reason. If I'm hurting somewhere in my head, there has to be a why.
Again, yeah.
And the big why is everywhere. And when you said I'm a bit of a problem solver, I'm the same in psychotherapy. I like to understand why. And with psychotherapy, there's things like CBT, which don't get to the big why. They change thinking and behaviours, but they don't get to the root cause. And for me, it's always important to go to the root cause.
Yeah, I was having that conversation today, actually, that CBT is, you know, it's quite powerful.
Yeah, yeah, really is.
And is really good in behaviour change.
Yeah.
However, if you're not dealing with the reasons in the first place,
every chance that will come back.
Exactly, and perhaps even worse.
Yeah. So, I use CBT in my practice, but I use it in conjunction with a lot of other stuff. Because it really is a powerful tool to shift thinking and behaviours. But for me, it's really important that we know why.
Yes,
just the big why is so important. Elaine, we have almost come to the end of our recording. I just want to thank you for sharing that. It's an incredibly personal story, but such a powerful one that I really hope that people will hear and hear such a positive outcome that you're here, you're fit and you're healthy and you got through it. So congratulations to you for doing that. Amazing for having such a powerful mindset.
Thank you.
That certainly helped you. Is there anything that you want to leave the listener with?
Yeah, I think if anything, just take one step. Doesn't matter how small it is, but that initial step will help.
Yeah.
And will get you moving and will start you on a course of action. And it is that taking action and taking control and just doing some little thing that you can, which will help so significantly.
That's amazing. baby steps is what I call them, a little step forward. Thank you so much for being here. That was amazing.
No, thank you for asking.
I'm sure that it will, your story will resonate with a lot of people. That's it. We're finished. Another podcast over with. So remember, these podcasts are yours. Remember that if we're not covering subjects that you want us to cover, then give us a shout. Let us know. Any kind of feedback is more than welcome. They are yours. So I'm going to go now. As I always say at the end of the podcast, please take care of yourself. Be kind to yourself because you are worth it. And be kind to everybody around you. Take care. Speak to you soon. Bye.